I feel like the irony there, though, is that at the same time that we have these this kind of cultural script about your partner's partner being someone you don't like, that at the same time we have this image of sort of the kitchen table poly where you and all of your partners and your partner's partners all get along and everyone's great. And we hear those stories, and I think sometimes can feel very guilty or feel very bad if that's not the experience we're having.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about what to do about metamor problems. Sometimes you love them, sometimes they're your least favorite person in the world, but if you are polyamorous, you need to at least learn to live with metamors. In this episode, we're going to be giving you tips and tricks for dealing with metamors you don't like, dealing with metamors who don't like you, and how to talk to your partners when you're the one stuck in the middle between some metamors who don't get along. Mm-hmm. So a lot of good stuff in this. This topic comes up so often.
Yeah, we've all been there in various capacities and playing various roles in all these various dynamics between metamors.
And something that you pointed out, Dedeker, when we were like doing the research for this episode, you were feverishly looking through our episode saying like, well, we must have done this like a year ago or a couple months ago, and we totally haven't. Like, I guess to some degree, like, we've talked about it, but not fully done an episode on this, even though it is kind of a fundamental.
Yeah, we've touched upon the subject definitely many, many times over the course of mm-hmm. many episodes. I think the last time we actually did an episode fully dedicated to this was episode 55,
wow.
which is many, many moons ago. We were so young and innocent back then.
Yeah,
seriously.
We've had a lot more practice at this particular issue as well now.
What, disliking metamors? Or having metamors dislike you? Or
sure, or being in the middle of it,
but also a lot of practice at good metamor relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is also true.
Having your partners get along. And it also, like, I think we've all had a lot of practice at things also feeling good as well. That gives a good contrast to when things are not feeling so good between metamors and partners.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And this is, if this is something that you have struggled with, this is something that comes up a ton in the Patreon group. This is a subject that comes up a lot, and it's not always just like, I don't like them. There's always nuance to it. There's often subtlety to it, but it is a real issue. But the thing I think that's really interesting about it, and I find this more and more with a lot of things within polyamory and non-monogamy, is that we end up with these sorts of relationships and these situations that seem very unique, right? Mm-hmm. Like the idea of a metamor, for most people, they're like, that's a super unique thing. Like, that doesn't really exist anywhere else. And so it's kind of hard to find resources, or it's hard to get a good perspective on how do I think about this. But then when you start to really look at it, we actually do have relationships very similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, it's like they're unique and they're also not. And so mm-hmm. what I mean by that with metamors is we essentially experience the same thing with our partner's best friends.
Or with family.
Or with our partner's family.
Right.
Yeah. That,
I think a lot of this can pertain to that as well, for sure.
Yeah. And so if there is something where you're kind of looking for perspective or other advice on this, that's actually a great place to look, is kind of because that experience is not new, right? That's not a unique experience of like having a friend who doesn't get along with me, or, you know, my partner's friend doesn't get along with me, or I don't like them, or having trouble getting along with a partner's family or something like that. So it is this really interesting thing where it's like unique and it's also not unique at the same time, this metamor relationship.
Yeah, because we do have such a long precedence of like when you get into a relationship with somebody, or when you marry somebody or whatever, like you inherit all that person's relationships as well, their existing relationships, as mm-hmm. well as any new relationships, like you're still connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's definitely a big backlog of advice out there for handling that kind of thing, because it's not always like a smooth transition. You know, you don't always like everyone who is in your partner's life before you, and you don't always like everyone who enters your partner's life after your relationship started. But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily like an impossible situation to work through. I think it's just that with the metamor thing, we already come to it with these really negative cultural scripts around what that relationship should be. Mm. You know, we already come with these very negative scripts preloaded of this idea of like, this is definitely going to be a competitive relationship or a resentful relationship, or there's no way that the two of you are on the same team. Like, you have to be enemies. You have to be competing for your partner's time or something like that. And so I think because we kind of come preloaded with a lot of those notions and seeing that played out over and over again, like in our movies and TV shows and stuff like that, that's why it can be so easy for like, oh, if someone dislikes me or if I dislike them, that it goes down this slippery slope of like all the bad stuff, like the competition and this extreme negativity that maybe it wouldn't with like a family relationship. But I guess it's kind of like what you're saying, Jace. There's like, it's like a Venn diagram in my mind of like the ways that it is unique and the ways that it's really actually quite similar to other relationships.
I feel like the irony there, though, is that at the same time that we have these, this kind of cultural script about your partner's partner being someone you don't like, that at the same time we have this image of sort of the kitchen table poly where you and all of your partners and your partner's partners all get along and everyone's great. And we hear those stories, and I think sometimes can feel very guilty or feel very bad if that's not the experience we're having.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Whereas on the other hand, it's like a stereotype that, you know, your partner's, you know, that your mother-in-law doesn't like you or something, right? That's such a stereotype that if that is your experience, you're like, well, that's normal. That's life.
That's so, mother-in-law's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But what we're trying to say is that this episode will have something for everyone, regardless of whether you're in a relationship with multiple metamors or not. Mm-hmm. This can still pertain to other aspects of your life for sure.
Right. Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
We are going to have three separate scenarios that probably at one point or another, all of you out there may have been in. And the first scenario is going to be the one in which you do not like your metamor or your partner's friend or your partner's mother or whatever. So this first scenario is definitely one that I've probably been in before.
Oh, I mean, I've definitely been in.
Yeah. It's a challenging one, absolutely. But it's a good one that if you find yourself in, you should probably ask yourself some questions. And the first of those questions will be, do I not like this person because I feel like they're smarter, they're funnier, they're prettier, they're sexier, or they're somehow better than me? And again, like all of these questions that we're going to ask ourselves in these scenarios are going to be ones that are really good to try to figure out, because often like you're going to be bringing your own personal biases into this relationship with your metamor. And so it's a good chance for you to check out, like, am I actually just having some personal insecurities here? Mm-hmm. Or do I really find something fundamentally off about my partner's metamor? Or well, my metamor, my partner's partner.
Well, that is the kind of thing, like Jace was saying, that on the other side of things, that we can see these idyllic kitchen table poly situations where like no one's feeling jealous and no one's feeling secure and it all feels great. And then that can engender this sense of like, if I do feel insecure, I can't be open about that, or I can't acknowledge that, you know, because it's like, because that's like, you know, that's newbie stuff. Like, I'm not supposed to feel insecure. I'm not supposed to, you know, be comparing myself to this person. And so I've definitely found for myself, like, it can get to this, like I can really cognitively shove that part down, like, and just not even acknowledge that what's going on is like, oh, I do feel like this person is better than me in some way. But like, I don't even let myself entertain that thought, 'cause I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I'm way too much of an evolved poly person to do that.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You know,
I would never think that.
Right. Clearly. Exactly. And it doesn't mean that, I think that if you ask yourself this question and if you do realize, yeah, like I do think that they're smarter or they make a lot more money and like that does make me feel weird, it doesn't mean that that's the only thing going on. Like I don't think it's, because I think I've seen some people, their dislike of their metamor or the issue they have with their metamor may be something that is more complex than just I feel insecure around them. but maybe that's wrapped up in it, but it's very easy for it to be just kind of dismissed of like, oh, well, this is just you being jealous, or this is just you mm-hmm. feeling insecure. So I think that's the important thing. In asking that question, it's not meant to just disregard any other like weird feelings you may have about your metamorph, but understanding that that may be part of what's fueling it.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you, Dedeker, but it still is a good opportunity in which to potentially check yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And say, like, hey, like, okay, are my feelings valid, or are they actually just wrapped up in my own personal biases and insecurities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there's that theory floating around, and this is a theory that's floating around, like, outside of, you know, the polyamory non-monogamy sphere, but this idea that, like, if you meet someone and you don't like them, it's because they reflect back to you some qualities of yourself that you don't like. And I've thought about that. I don't know if it always holds up. I'm not sure. I think it does probably hold up in some scenarios, but I don't think it's necessarily a blanket statement.
Sure.
But related to that, another question to ask yourself is, you know, is my dislike of this person based in the fact that they remind me of someone from my past that I don't like? I think that's a pretty common thing that happens. Like, is there something about the tone of their voice or about the way that they speak or the things that they're interested in or the way that they style themselves that I'm just like, ugh, like I had an experience with someone like that once that left a bad taste in my mouth. And so now I'm kind of automatically projecting that onto this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's interesting to think about that too, of like, or does this person remind me of some aspect of myself that I don't like? And I think that's something actually we're going to get into more later, is this idea of projecting your own thoughts or feelings onto this person, either your own ones that you do and that you have, or your own ones that you've internalized about the way that all men are or all women are, or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So I feel like there's kind of levels to this. I hope we'll get into that a little bit more later. The next one kind of related to that is, do I feel like this partner is too different from me? You know, does that mean that, oh, if my partner is into this, how could they also be into me?
No, oh, I've definitely felt that one.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
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 The too similar or too different can both evoke that same feeling of like, they're going to replace me, or like, wait, how could they be into me if they're also into this person who looks totally different than me, or is into totally different things, or, you know, has a totally different like sense of humor than I do, or like all sorts of things like that.
Right.
I think it's a really good opportunity to remind yourself that like polyamory allows you to explore so many different facets of who you are, and that, you know, for your partner, they may be really interested in something or find something very attractive in something in someone else that is a quality that you don't have at all. And that's completely understandable because it reflects like this impressive, new, exciting part of them. And that really has nothing to do with you. And I think in the moment that can be really difficult to understand and to allow, maybe, and say like, okay, this is all right. It's challenging and it might hurt, but I think it's great that they get this side of themselves filled from this other person. So yeah, I think that's challenging, but it can be the case, and something to think about there.
Yeah, I feel like that with this one, I've found for myself personally that I've definitely had sort of a lot more peace in my life the more I've been able to accept that other people can be better than me at things and just like let them have that. And what I mean is like, rather than feeling like, oh, well, they are good at this thing that I've never really had that much of an interest in or spent that much time on, but like, now I've got to be focused on that, or I've got to try to be better at that and compete in like every arena, essentially.
Interesting.
And, and I've definitely found, and I've even done this in the past with my partners themselves. Like, you're dating someone and they're into something or good at something. It's like, well, I've got to be just as good at that thing or better at that thing.
Right.
Like, I'm never going to be as good at languages as the two of you are. But that's okay. Like,
yeah, well, I'm never going to be as good at like karaoke and Mario Kart as Emily is.
I don't know. Thanks.
But
you're quite, you hold your own for sure.
In which part?
In Mario Kart?
Yeah. I knew she was talking
about
Mario
Kart. What was the other one?
Yeah. Karaoke.
What was the other one that you said?
Karaoke.
Oh, karaoke. Yeah. Oh, no, you still do. Come on.
I mean, I can hold a solid sixth place in both arenas, I believe.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow. Oh, gosh. But yeah, anyway, I guess that kind of letting go. Like, for example, right now I have a metamor who even works in the same industry that I do. And that could be very easy to fall into this competitive thing of like, oh, he's worked on a bigger film than I have, or right, he works in 3D and I don't as much, or right, something like that. And I've just found my life is a lot happier by not worrying about that and being like, that's awesome. Like, I get to be excited about the fact that he does these things and that he works on these big movies, and I don't have to put in the hours involved in working on those movies.
That's true.
Or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Like,
just kind of letting him have his things, even if they're similar to mine, has definitely been helpful for me.
So I'm going to switch the angle of this questioning a little bit. You can also ask yourself, does this person have a reputation for treating others badly? And this is definitely one to kind of take with a grain of salt. I think on the positive side, like, if you're active in a community of people who are poly-friendly or polyamorous or whatever, you know, they can definitely act as a dating pool. And kind of the both good and bad thing about communities like that is that gossip travels pretty fast often. Mm. And gossip in its nature, sometimes it's accurate, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. And so if someone has a reputation for treating others badly, I think that then you kind of need to get into some sub-questions, some subcategories of question of like, okay, was that something that I heard from someone else? Was that something that I observed? Did I have a personal experience with this person, like witnessing them or directly experiencing them treating me or someone that I know badly? You know, kind of like, what have I heard and what have I gotten? And is that fueling my dislike of this person? Because let me tell you, there's definitely people that I've known in like the communities that I consider that I'm connected to, where it's like, if someone that I knew started dating this person, I would definitely be like,
red flags.
I've heard some really bad things about this person, or I've seen this person treat other people really badly. And so that would definitely be a part of that exploration process of like, okay, I know for sure that like my reaction to this person is very much fueled by my perception of their reputation.
Yeah. And I think it's important in those instances also to like try to figure out what your own opinion of that person is, like regardless of what other people may think. But maybe in those instances, like go out with this person to coffee or something and try to get to know them and try to see like, hey, do I agree with that? You know, or can I build a separate idea of who I think this person is?
I guess this idea of giving this person a chance. I mean, okay, this feels like such a thing that's like so case specific. It's hard to give
it is
broad advice, but it seems like I would think that if it's the kind of thing where you've only heard rumors maybe, or you just heard gossip, like maybe trying to give a chance. Like, yeah, I think Emily's suggestion is good, as of like giving yourself a chance to humanize this person and form your own opinion.
I think humanizing people in general is a really good thing to do in a lot of these instances.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before.
I mean, I think something else that goes along with this is even if it's not just gossip, but say you heard this from a close friend of yours who dated them and they were like, for example, this person was super pushy and like always arguing with me and like pressuring me to do things or whatever, right? That you might be like, okay, I've heard this from a reliable source. This is not a good person. Therefore, I'm justified in disliking them. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that with someone else, that experience would be the same. And we've talked about this in the past in terms of like the different ways that people argue or the different ways that people debate or like make decisions together. And it's largely based on how their family did it when they were younger, kind of what their role models were for that. But that same person with someone else might not come across as pushy, but just like, I'm glad that they stand up for what they want to do too, because so do I. And that's how we reach a consensus where we both, you know, end up doing what we want because we're both very vocal about what it is we want and we can negotiate that way. Whereas for someone else who's much more accommodating or was raised in a, you know, a culture or, you know, a family culture where you don't do that, you don't like strongly advocate for your needs, to them that's pushy and they're always feeling like they're being, you know, coerced or pressured into always doing what the other person wants and not them, right? So even that, even if you have heard these things, even that's not 100% like, yes, this person is bad, right? That it really does come down to, how does my partner feel about it? How do they feel in this relationship? Not how did someone else feel in this relationship with them?
Totally. So finally, the last item on this list is one that often happens, I think, if your partner was dating this person for a while, broke up with them, and then gets back together with them. Hmm. And they also have a reputation of, like, maybe treating your partner badly in the past. So ask yourself that. Ask yourself, like, is that a thing that's coming up for me right now and I automatically don't like them because I know that they had a messy breakup and they're deciding to get back together for whatever reason, but I still have my biases regarding that last scenario that they were in together. So that's an interesting one for sure. And I would still say, like, your partner is allowed to make their own decisions and they're allowed to, like, you know, choose what mountain to die on if they want to, like, be with this person or not, to use my mother's phrase. But yes, I think it is important, even though, yeah, you may be like, hey, this ended really badly last time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you should do this again. They still have to make that decision for themselves at the end of the day.
Yeah, that is the tough thing, is that, like, yeah, you can't, like, you really can't coerce or force your partner into, like, not entering into a relationship with somebody. People do it. I mean, people do it all the time. People find all kinds of creative ways to coerce or manipulate or force their partner to not enter into a relationship. But
don't do that. Don't do that.
It's not a good thing to
it's
do.
Not a good regular
practice. We're not advocating for that at right. all.
Yeah. But I've definitely been there. Like, I've definitely been with partners who, like, have gotten back together with an ex or have gone to, like, hook up with someone that didn't treat them very well. And it's really hard to feel like, you don't want to be like, you know, you don't want to be like their mom being like, this is going to end badly for you, or why are you doing this, yada, yada, yada. But you also don't want to see them get hurt again. So it's definitely a hard place to live. And I think it can manifest as just like a dislike of this person that, you know, caused some harm to your partner in the past.
Yeah. I think something that's going to come up again and again in this discussion is that at the end of the day, you know, you do have to let your partner make their decisions and trust them to make their decisions. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't trust them to make good decisions, you still kind of have to trust them to make good decisions anyway. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that it is their choice to do that. And so it is, that is something worth keeping in mind for sure, is
absolutely
that you're not their parent, right? It isn't your job to tell them what they can and can't do or who they can and can't date. And that's, I think a lot of people default to that. I think a lot of people get a little parental with their partners sometimes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we just wanted to thank Paige Turner and their blog Polyland for this list, because it's a great list. I found it today and loved it so much I had to include it in this part of the episode. So thanks again for that, because you can go actually to their website and check out, I believe it is the article, Help, I don't like this metamor that my partner dates. Crap. That's just the URL. No, I don't know. It's but,
like,
look it up.
Yeah. It's poly.land. And it's like, you know, if you do a search for help, I don't like the person that my partner is dating.
Exactly.
And what, so if you want kind of like a more in-depth analysis of each of these questions, and I do appreciate that what Paige writes about this list of questions is essentially like, if you're able to answer these questions, it doesn't mean that your feelings are invalid immediately. You know, like none of these, I feel like none of these are like, oh, okay, you answer this question and that means like your dislike is automatically like absolved or resolved or whatever. Like this is all just kind of more like really helpful exploratory things to help inform kind of the next step or what conversations you may need to have about this person.
Yeah. So as we move forward with this, so again, in this situation where you dislike your metamor, you have some sort of problem with them, that with all of these questions, it's important to look at yourself and ask that question, like, is my discomfort coming from me? Is it about them? Is it about thoughts I have about my partner? Or like I mentioned earlier, is it assumptions that I make about what all men or all women or all whomever, you know, all people are like that my partner's dating? Like, do I assume that all people are manipulative and therefore I'm going to read that into everything my metamors do, right? Is exploring those, asking those questions, like, where is this coming from? What's this really about?
Yeah,
definitely. And I've definitely found that if you're really struggling with the dislike, or if you're really struggling with some of these questions, you really can't quite place your finger on exactly what it is. It's just, it's really easy for it to be a self-perpetuating cycle. It's really easy, like if you have some kind of dislike for your metamorph for some reason, it really doesn't matter what the reason is, it's really easy to then start to read into things too much, or, you know, really really come up with some interesting subtext for like otherwise innocuous seeming text messages, or to like be able to find and see more evidence that your metamorph is a bad person, you know, total confirmation bias. And so that's why it can be important to get a third party or get an objective opinion of some kind to talk about what's going on between you and your metamorph, or like what's going on within you in your dislike of this person. It could be someone like a therapist. It could be a friend who is removed from the situation, doesn't have a stake in the situation, but who you trust to be honest with you. Even the patron group, this happens all the time where people will be like, my metamorph texted me this, and I think that it totally shows that they're you know, being really mean and really nasty and really selfish, but like, what do you all think? And sometimes people mm-hmm. will be like, I don't really see that actually when I read that, you know, like, or, oh no, actually, I think that is justified for you to think that.
Yeah, can definitely be helpful to get right, that outside can, opinion.
Yes, because yeah. like you can, if you've already kind of preformed an opinion about someone, it's very easy for it to just kind of color every other interaction that you have with them. So it's first of all something that's important to bear in mind as you interact with this person, but then also good to get another set of eyes on the situation. Because let me tell you, like, there have been so many times with friends actually who have some kind of tiff with somebody where they'll show me a text message in like exchange and be like, can you believe that they said this? And I read it and I'm like, I can't see the part that's like, they just like
the issue here.
They just said they were going to be late to like coffee. Like, I'm just like, I don't understand, you know, because I'm not in the situation. So it's hard for me to understand like what's actually going on.
Right.
So that's just another thing to try. I've shown you
like emails and various things, and it's good to get your opinion and mm-hmm. be like, hey, and also like show me things that I haven't even thought of before. So yeah, that's very nice as well.
Yeah.
So it is really important in these scenarios, and we're going to talk about this later as well, that you should not be bad-mouthing your metamorph to your partner. That's very important for a variety of reasons, but it also puts your partner in kind of a shitty situation where you're like, well, I'm hearing about my loved one in a bad light by my other partner, and that blows. And so be considerate of that and be understanding that, like, your partner's not going to want to hear that from you, even if you are having a hard time in these scenarios.
Yeah, I've made this mistake many times.
Oh, really? For sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's... I mean, the last time that I can think of, like, when I was in a period of my life in relationships where I was having, like, a really hard time with a particular metamorph, I did find some solace in being able to vent to other people. Like, that's when it's good to...
Okay, yeah.
Especially also venting... I mean, I vented to the two of you, but I also vented to people totally removed from the situation. And that was arguably like,
well, that's
the best feeling. Venting was just having someone who has no stake that I can literally, like, you know, can practically play the poor baby game that they talk about in The Ethical Slut, you know, where I can just be like, and this person does this, and then they did this, and then, ooh, I really don't like the way they do that. And they'd be like, oh yeah, gosh, they sound like they're really sick. You know, they can purely just support you and like your issues with this person. But I think I didn't do that enough, because I definitely like also ended up like mouthing off to my partner and like saying some really like mean things in the spur of the moment about this person, like because of my frustration. And it's, I don't know, it's definitely something where it's like, in that particular scenario that I'm thinking of, there were some things that were justified in like my dislike of this person, but there were also some things that were really not. And but unfortunately, both of those came out of my mouth multiple times. And it's like the toothpaste thing, you know, once you squeeze it out, you can't put it back in. Like,
oh boy,
it's, you know, it's you out cannot. There. It's out there.
Yeah. And I think also, even, or maybe especially if you do feel like you have pretty legitimate concerns about your partner's partner and how they're treating them and stuff like that, that talking badly about them is probably the least effective thing you could do to actually get your partner to change their mind and still like you at the end of it. Right. Yeah, that what you're actually going to end up is a situation where your partner is now resenting you because they're not feeling good around you. And it's going to invalidate any very real concerns that you might have about this other person. So really, like, trying to avoid this at all costs is so important. I also probably around a similar time that, Dedeker was struggling with this. Like, I also struggled with this too. And when I finally made that realization, that really changed things a lot in my relationship, and also just in how, in the future and in the present, I've handled that sort of situation. Of just like,
well, and often,
yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, often it's just like a moment of catharsis for you, whereas right. like in the big picture, it's not going to be good overall
yeah.
to do that. And, you know, to be unkind in a way to this decision that your partner is consistently making and still wanting to be with this other person. And it's like, yeah, like you said, invalidating that in a way, and that's shitty. So just don't do it. Just be the bigger person. Be the bigger person here.
Yeah.
And try to be understanding of the situation. And, you know, think about it. Think about, like, why this is happening and maybe, hopefully, what can be done to remedy the situation. So,
yeah.
All right.
And with all that, of this, yeah, with all of this, the last thing we just wanted to reiterate, that it's not about you. Your partner's decision in who else they date is not a reflection of you. It's not about you. It's not your decision to make. You know what I mean? That this is, if you love this person and want to be with this person, part of what comes with that is trusting them to make their own decisions and having their own life, right? That just remember that, like, come back to that when you need to, of just like, my partner's decisions with what they do with other people are not about me.
That's a hard truth to internalize.
It's tough. It is tough, but it's important.
Yeah.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
We just covered all the ins and outs of scenario A, which is where you don't like your metamorph for some reason. So let's switch things to scenario B, which is that your metamorph doesn't like you. Or again, could be a friend of your partner, their best friend, family member, whoever. But for the purposes of this exercise, we'll just go with their metamorph, but or your metamorph, their partner, doesn't like you for some reason. So there's all kinds of potential things to try on in this scenario and to bear in mind moving forward. It's going to be like some of the same advice that we applied to, like, when you don't like your metamorph, you know, doing a lot of examination and stuff like that. However, there are some particular things to this scenario that will be helpful.
Yeah. So number one, first of all, is do not use your mutual partner as a go-between. And this isn't just so simple as like, don't send messages through them, but your mutual partner is probably going to try to do this by default. Not because they think they're being a go-between, but just they're like, oh, well, you know, they you know, you're talking about the situation and you're saying like, oh, it's frustrating. I don't understand why they wouldn't like me over this thing, or that doesn't seem fair. And they will then go, oh, well, I'll talk to them about that. I'll try to you know, mention that to them and see if they can calm down about it or something.
Or your partner coming to you and being like, well, they told me that like this happened at this party and that then like you said this thing. And so that's why I think that they're upset with you or they don't like you.
Right.
Yeah.
So when your partner does this, and they will, Like, they will. It's just, if they're, when we're going to get to scenario C, where you're the person who's in the middle, but is don't let them do it. Stop them from doing it. Ask them not to do it. That means, you know, say you're sharing something about how you feel and they go, oh, I'll try to talk to them about that. Go, no, please don't, actually. Like, if that's something that they and I are going to talk about, like, let us do that. Please don't be the go-between. Please don't try to relay messages between us. And the same thing, if it comes back the other way, just be like, I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I know this is important to you, but please don't end up as the go-between between us. Mm-hmm. This is huge. This is so huge, which is why it's number one on our list here, is just right from the start, like, don't, it's going to happen a little bit. It just will. That's how humans work. But don't let that become the norm. Don't let that become a thing you rely on or a thing that, you know, becomes their full-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the second one is going to be, if you can, try to talk to your metamor about this, about this issue that might be happening. If you know what the issue is, even if you don't, maybe, like, try to ask them, hey, what's going on here? And this can look a number of ways. So you can maybe ask them to go grab coffee with you, to go for a walk, to even have a Skype call, especially if they're in a different part of the country from you. And we would say that texting is okay, but it does kind of limit the face-to-face interaction that you have with this person and a lot of the nuance and subtext that can happen from having a face-to-face conversation can be lost. So we don't necessarily recommend that. And also in these moments, practice nonviolent communication. I think it can be challenging because people, like, really want to be liked. And if you know that your metamor, which is someone really important to your partner, doesn't like you, this can really suck and really be challenging and put you in a position where you want to know why and where you want to fix it. So if that is the case for you, then you can try to employ these specific things and try to talk to them again in a very nonviolent communication way.
Can you like, Dedeker, Emily, can you talk to us about, like, what does that look
yeah.
like? What's that mean?
Well, I mean, first of all, I will just kind of direct people to just, like, do your homework on NBC. You know, there's plenty of resources out there to talk about nonviolent communication, what the different steps are. But I think what I feel, my opinion of what's most important here, when confronting a metamor, is to use the first step of NBC, which is the stating an observation rather than an interpretation. So that means it can be like, hey, so I've noticed that the last three times that I've sent you a message on social media, like, you haven't responded, for instance.
Okay.
Or, like, a significant amount of time passes by with it, like, without a response. Or it could be like, hey, so I noticed, you know, last week when we were at that event together, I came up to talk to you and, like, you weren't making eye contact or you know, would move away or, and like, this can be really tricky, but basically the idea is to just purely state what you observed rather than it being, hey, you're ignoring me on social media or, hey, like, you were really rude to me at that party or whatever. Like, it's just going to set you up for just a much better conversation around what the actual behavior is. Because it could be a thing where it's like, you were at that party, you saw the way that your metamor behaved, and to you, you were like, oh, they must have some problem with me. And maybe to them, they were like, I had terrible nausea that night, you know? I was trying to avoid all social interaction. Like, you don't know. Sometimes it's that simple, sometimes it's not that simple. But that's why it is really important to just really dial down to just what your observations of the behavior are. And even thinking about that for yourself is going to help. I think it's also going to be a helpful exercise that will help cut through some of the, like, am I projecting this? Am I, like, is this something that actually happened? Am I making assumptions? You know, am I doing this based on what I think my partner's told me about what's going on? You know, all those things.
Yeah. another thing I want to point out about this, too, is I think the way we've been talking about it so far is kind of under the assumption that you and your metamor have already had some communication with each other. But sometimes there hasn't really been that yet. And so if you are kind of hearing maybe through your partner that their other partner is really struggling or they're having a problem with you or, you know, you're starting to identify these things, but you haven't talked with them yet, still reaching out to them can be a very good thing, but it might look a little bit different. Instead of the first message or the first contact from you being like, hey, what's the deal?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That a place to start could just be from a place of, hey, I just wanted to reach out so that you have a way to get in touch with me if you need to, you know, kind of even making it like, hey, this is also for you. Like, it's not, I'm not trying to control you or manipulate the situation, but just, you know, in case you want to be able to talk to me about anything, if they're someone who's in an existing relationship already, it can also be helpful to just acknowledge the fact that I really respect your relationship with our mutual partner. I think it's great. And I just wanted to make that clear that, like, I, you know, have no interest in doing anything against that relationship, that I respect it. And, you know, just want to be sure that that's clear, and hopefully you and I can coordinate. So if there's special events or special things that you want to do, we can communicate about that so that we're not both kind of competing for making plans on the same days or something, right? Mm-hmm. Just putting those things in place sometimes can just solve it right there. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes. So obviously sometimes it won't, but that definitely is a helpful thing to put out there. It's something I'm not very good at, like, proactively doing, but when other people do it, I'm like, oh, that's great. Like, I really appreciate that mm-hmm. person did that thing, or that my partner did that with my other partner. Like, mm-hmm. it's nice to see that, and it can be a really helpful thing.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing to keep in mind is to just take care if you're going to make the choice to talk to your partner about your metamor not liking you. Kind of the same, you know, caveats that we gave at the beginning, that it's like you really want to avoid trying to make your partner into the middleman or into, like, the mouthpiece or the interpreter or the go-between. That's why, again, using NBC just to talk about observations to your partner, it could be like, hey, at that event on Friday that we were all at, I noticed that this person was acting this way, or I saw that they did this, and I was wondering if they were okay, or if there was anything going on, you know, things like that. Just basically anything that you can do to avoid making your partner into your metamor's representative or their defense attorney. You know, you don't want to end up in a conversation where you're like, well, were they feeling this way? And your partner's like, oh, I don't know, maybe they were feeling angry about this thing. And you're like, well, why would they be angry about that thing? And they're like, well, I don't know, maybe it was this. And then, like, you're having a conversation about what was going on with your metamor when your metamor's not even there to actually talk about what's going on inside themselves. So just avoiding that, basically, and just really taking care in the way that you choose to talk to your partner about it.
I think that's another one that's so easy to slip into that. The same as having them be the go-between is to slip into the partner having to defend you to each other between the metamors. So yeah, really, like, be mindful of that. Be so mindful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Number four on our list for this one is to kill them with kindness, is to be apologetic when necessary and be understanding when necessary. This one can be challenging when pride gets in the way. Especially once it's gotten to the point of feeling sort of adversarial or feeling like this person's always attacking me. Like, why would I apologize to them if they're the one being a jerk? I've been there. Yeah, that's a hard thing to do. but this can also be helpful in, like, if you're requesting something from your metamor. Like, for example, I got a message once from one of my metamors,
my metaphorical metamor,
where we were trying to make plans with our mutual partner, and he kind of started a request by sort of being apologetic and like, hey, like, I'm really sorry if this messes with your plans, but I actually kind of really wanted to have this time with her. You know, like, I don't mean that to be anything against you. I know you kind of made these plans. But just starting from that place, I was like, oh, no, like, that's totally fine. Like, I appreciated that he wasn't just like, hey, I need this, but still was asking for what he wanted. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, I get that. I can change my plans easily. That's no problem. So anyway, that can definitely be helpful, of just, like, approaching it with kindness and gentleness and maybe sort of apologeticness and understanding.
Yeah, I think that goes a really, really long way.
Yeah.
People are more likely to be like, well, fuck, okay. Like, I can't be a dick to this person because, like, they are being really understanding of me in this moment, and that means something.
Yeah.
And so in these very tight-knit communities of non-monogamous or, you know, it, just any type of people that even friend communities that, like, know each other quite well, sometimes there are these moments where people get gossiped about. And it's shitty. It's not okay, in my opinion, at all. Mm-hmm. And if you know that people are out there gossiping about you,
that try you're to metamoras? Take a high...
Yeah, exactly. Or, anyone, but specifically in this scenario, yeah, that your metamor is gossiping about you. Try to take the high road and don't choose to do the same thing to them. Don't try to gossip about them back to the rest of your community or people who might be on your side about this particular thing. Because that's just going to breed intolerance and unkindness towards one another. So, yeah, take the high road, absolutely, in this scenario. And honestly, like, it'll probably make you look better in this scenario, because you are not the one who's choosing to do that.
Yeah, it's just a lot more of, like obfuscating the scenario and, like, creating more diversions away from there being direct communication between the two of you.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's shitty to do all around.
Right. And now, I mean, we've definitely seen a lot of these scenarios where it's, like, maybe your metamor is straight up, like, being hostile toward you or saying hurtful things to you, or it's just really not a pleasant interaction or a harmful interaction, if anything. And it is okay to limit your interactions with your metamor. You know, it is okay to have boundaries around how much you will talk to this person or not talk to this person. It is okay to have boundaries around not going to the same events as this person, if it's based in the fact that it's, like, in order for you to protect yourself from this person's harm, you know, that's the boundary that you need to have in place. But it is okay. Again, like, we will reiterate that it's, like, you're under no obligation to have any particular type of relationship with your metamor or particular interaction or particular communication. And especially in this scenario where if there's some kind of aggression or hostility or you feel like you're receiving harm from your metamor, then yes, it is totally okay to have personal boundaries. Again, we will forward you to our episode on the basics of boundaries to remember that, like, boundaries are going to be placed on yourself. It's not going to be about you policing how much your partner does or doesn't get to hang out with this particular person, but just how your own behavior is concerned.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of our last point, as before, is remember at the end of the day, it's their issue and not yours. That if your metamor has this problem with you for whatever reason, that's their issue to deal with. And kind of keeping in mind from scenario A, what we've talked about, that they're probably going through all of those things and having to explore those things, or maybe not exploring them, but ideally they will, that those are all factors going on, and that so much more of it's about them and not about you. And this one can be hard. And I think there's two parts to this. There's one is just how you feel about yourself being like, it can be easy. I know I've experienced falling into this, like, well, what's wrong with me that this person dislikes me so much, especially if this has happened to you more than once. It's like, well, what's wrong with me? And while I think maybe there's sometimes value in that question, it is important to remember. And I appreciate the two of you for reminding me of this, of being like, it is their issue, not yours. And then on the other hand is, remembering that can help you avoid falling into the trap of just doing the same thing back to them, right? And this one is big, right? Of not feeling like,
yeah,
oh, well,
it's like a cyclical thing.
It's like Emily mentioned with the gossip, like, don't gossip back about them. At the same time, if they're trash talking you to your shared partner, don't do the same to them. You could express that that is hurtful to you, or even better, maybe express like, hey, I'd appreciate if you didn't try to be the go-between and send those messages to me. Like, that's something that you and that person need to work out. That's not, you know, that's not my thing. If they want to talk to me directly, they can. But just do not fall into the trap of making it a you against them, because that's not going to work out better for you in any way. There's no scenario where that's a better outcome for you. So just don't. And that can be really hard, but that's one of probably the most valuable lessons I've learned. It's like, don't fall into the trap of letting it be you against them. Let it be them against themselves, essentially. All right. And now we're moving on to scenario C, which is where you are the person in the middle, where both of your partners are having trouble getting along, or one doesn't like the other, right? And you are stuck in the middle of this. This is a scenario, like we've said, we've all been in all of these different roles at different times, and we hear about this a lot, and it can be very stressful. It can be very difficult. Hopefully, each of your partners will be able to listen to this episode, maybe recommend this episode to them, because them doing their parts in A&D are going to help you out a lot and is going to help themselves out a lot. And so with that, we just wanted to kind of quickly go through this. A lot of it's going to be similar, just kind of the opposite side of things we've already covered, but things to keep in mind for yourself, as well as some things you can do. Some of these come from us, and some are from Franklin Vo and Eve Rickert, where they've also written about some of these things.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
So initially, listen and support both of your partners, for sure. Be there for them in as best a way as you can. That, again, doesn't mean that you need to badmouth the other partner to each of them, but simply just, like, be a listening ear and, you know, employ understanding to both of them.
Yep.
Because, understandably, it might be difficult in both scenarios.
Yeah. And now a part of that listening still needs to have boundaries in it. Like, it doesn't mean that you're okay to just sit there and listen to one of your partners just trash talk the other partner or insult them or call them names or whatever. So it is okay to enforce clear boundaries around the fact that, like, you won't listen to that particular type of talk, or that you will speak up and be like, hey, actually, I don't think that you should be telling me this or saying this to me, or I'm not going to continue this conversation if it's going to be just like insulting this particular person. It is okay to have boundaries like that, because, again, it puts you in a really crappy scenario of wanting to be supportive, but it's at the same time, you probably don't want to back up your partner on, like, yeah, it totally is like a snot weasel or whatever insult they've just leveled us. I didn't want to be too profane. Give me a break. You know, so, but that is up to you to have those boundaries in place if your partner isn't, being conservative in the way that they're talking about their metamorph.
Right, like that they're not being respectful to them and to you in the way that they're communicating their feelings.
Yes.
That you can say, again, the boundary is, I'm not going to be part of this conversation. The boundary is not, I'm putting a boundary on you. Don't say those things. That's an important distinction we always need to make.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right, the next one here is to not be the go-between. Don't try to fix things for them. So that's not just like, don't be the go-between in terms of relaying messages, which we've already said is not good. Don't try to translate for each other or figure each of them out for them. But also, like, this isn't your job to fix, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can offer some support in that, but ultimately this is their issue to fix, either about themselves or with each other, and maybe doing some things to facilitate that could help. But still, at the end of the day, like, this isn't your job to fix. This isn't your responsibility to fix. It's not your job to parent these people and make them get along like, you know, they're your children who are fighting with each other.
Totally. Yeah. And also along with that, Eve Rickert talked about how you should not be blaming, shaming, or pressuring each of your partners to figure this thing out just for your sake. And that is really important and an interesting thing to bring up, because I think that one could easily be like, fuck both of you, like, this is awful for me, like, can you please just, like, figure it out, because it's really, really challenging for me to be in the middle of this.
And I just want to express my dissenting opinion about this one.
I know.
Is
it's hard.
I think that obviously, like, shaming and blaming isn't a great way to go about this. However, I do think there can be some value to being like, to expressing to your partners, hey, you talking badly about this person, you hating this person, you throwing a fit every time I hang out with this person, those things hurt me. They don't hurt this other person. They hurt me. I think there is value to that, and to kind of being like, dude, like, you're in a relationship with me, not this other person. You need to fucking get over this, because this is hurting me. This sucks, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately having those boundaries for yourself of like, well, okay, I don't want to be in a relationship where I'm being made to feel this way. So I do feel like,
I
on the other hand, there
is a specific boundary rather than just being like, I would need you to figure it out and be friends with this person because it will benefit me and my relationship with both of you ultimately. Like, there may be a scenario in which you're not going to be able to figure it out, and you can compartmentalize both of those relationships to a degree, and it's not going to be harmful to any of you. But
I will say that I liked the way that Emily phrased it better than saying you need to fucking get over this. I understand your sentiment behind it. But I don't think that's going to be very well received.
Well, of course, sure. I think what Emily brought up, though, that I think is important is that it's more about, I need you to figure this out in a way that makes you not treat me badly because of it and not cause trouble in our relationship because of it. Whereas I would definitely agree, like, don't shame or say, like, you have to get along with this person or you have to like this person or to try to coerce them into some kind of relationship that they don't want. I think that's definitely worth pointing out. But just, I think maybe keeping the focus more on, like, I need you to at least get enough of a grip to be able to maintain our relationship. That I do think there is some value in that, because I think sometimes people don't realize it. They're so focused on how much they don't like this other person or how much they think this other person is the cause of these problems that they don't realize how much they're hurting you in the process of disliking that person.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true. And I think just another reminder is that if you find yourself caught in this scenario, like, be compassionate to yourself. Like, it is okay to give yourself some gentleness and some love and some compassion, because I think that it is important that you're able to take ownership of the things that you may have done that maybe contributed to this scenario. Because, you know, because sometimes it is. Sometimes it's like, oh, maybe, like, I lied to this person, or I really didn't respect this person's feelings. And then that just kind of, like, added fuel to the fire, essentially, of what's going on between my two partners. So it is okay to, like, take ownership of the things that you have done, but you also don't need to take full responsibility for the entire scenario, because these are two separate people who are functioning separately from you. And that is okay for there to be that sense of separation, and that, like, to a certain extent, this is going to be their thing to work out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, at the end of the day, realize that these two people are adults, and therefore it is ultimately up to them to decide if they want to mend things or not, and they may not want to. They may be okay with sticking in this place of, like, resentment and anger, or it may just be that case for a while, for a number of years even, and it is possible for change to occur, but it may take time, and that's something to be aware of as well, like, it may be challenging in those moments. And if you want to stay with these two people, then, you know, some understanding there is perhaps needed in those moments.
Or the mending of it may look like them deciding, like, we can't have any kind of connection with each other. Like, we can't. Sure. We just can't. Like, that's just what we've decided. It's like, we're both going to have boundaries around, like, where we can't be friends. Like, we can't hang out with each other. And that is sad, and it's not necessarily ideal. However, like, if that's what fixes the scenario, like, that is something that's worthy of respect. Also, if two people having boundaries, it means that you have to figure out some things logistically, you know. You still have to advocate for your own needs as the partner in the middle of, you know, what it is that you need from each relationship. But sometimes that happens, you know, and that is their decision.
Yeah, and related to all of that and connected to all this is, it's important to take care of yourself and to prioritize your own mental health and your well-being. That it's okay to take time away for yourself to recalibrate and connect to what it is you actually want. Like, why are you in these relationships in the first place? It's easy to get lost in just, all I'm doing is damage control. All I'm doing is trying to make everyone else happy, and I'm not actually enjoying these relationships at all. That it is worth it to take that time to really figure that out for yourself, and to, you know, to find a way to be like, how can I actually enjoy these relationships? What boundaries do I need for that? How do I need to be taking care of myself? But just remember that, like, take care of yourself. Your purpose in this relationship isn't just to run around trying to appease everyone else.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to end things out on, I just have to, you know, we have to cover this because it comes up in the patron group. It's always a question that's asked, and it's, you know, okay, so, but what if I have a problem with my metamor because I think my metamor is abusing my partner in some way, like either physically abusive, emotionally abusive, verbally abusive, whatever. And whether, like, maybe it's based on, I just think that that's the case, or the behavior that my partner displays seems to be that case, or maybe my partner has straight up told me that this person is abusive, you know, any number of scenarios. So these kind of fall on a spectrum. I feel like the darker side of it tends to be like, oh, well, I think that this person is abusive, so it's okay for me to dislike them. It's maybe not necessarily based on evidence, not necessarily based on what's actually going on. It's just that, like, maybe I've heard some negative stories and I've kind of continued the story in my head that this person is abusive or manipulative, so that means it's okay for me to dislike my metamor and not have to do anything to, like, fix the relationship. Mm. That's kind of like the darker, more dysfunctional side of it. The less dark side of it, it's not like the light side, but like the less dark side of it that I've seen is more of that of, like, I know that this person's abusive, or like my partner has told me that this person is abusive, but I feel so powerless to do anything because they're still with this person. And in those scenarios, again, like we were saying at the beginning, it's really a lot of the same advice as if you suspect that a friend or any loved one is in an abusive relationship. It's not an ideal scenario to be in because it can feel very helpless, but it doesn't mean that there's nothing that you can do. There are things like, you know, you can speak up, you can express concern for their safety without judgment. You know, it doesn't have to be a judgment of them staying in the relationship or being with this person, but it is okay to speak up and express that you are concerned about them and about what's going on in the relationship. And bear in mind that direct intervention, I know that I think when we know that someone's in an abusive relationship, it's really easy to feel like, okay, we got to sweep in and save them. You know, we're going to come in the night and like bundle them up and whisk them away to their new life and everything's going to be okay. We got to rescue them. But the thing is that unfortunately, direct intervention like that can often make the situation more dangerous, but not only for you trying to do the rescuing, but also for your partner who's potentially being abused. Like, it can really make things really, really a lot worse and potentially dangerous. And so it's better to go at it kind of in a more gentle way. It is okay to ask them if they're open to certain things, such as, like, are you open to reaching out to an abuse hotline? Or how would you feel about making a report to the police? Or do you think that finding some professional help here would be helpful? Can I help you in doing that? And again, asking is okay, but pushing someone into something, so as in like pushing your partner into like, you got to leave this person, or you need to get help, or you need to call this person, like, unfortunately, from the perspective of the person in the middle here, it's likely to feel more like just more abuse and control rather than you're trying to help me. It's going to be more likely to feel like, ugh, this is like another scenario where someone else is kind of like trying to dictate what I do or tell me what to do, and it's probably not going to feel good. So again, if it is a scenario where it seems like there's some abuse happening, unfortunately, like, you can't directly intervene, but you can express your concern, you can speak up, you can advocate for your partner and kind of try to create a container and a context for them that feels as safe as possible for them to make the decisions to leave or to get help and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So just to bring us back around, sort of the key takeaways from all of this is that it's often their issue and not yours, and that there's things that you can do to sort of keep your own side of the street clean, is an expression that Dedeker likes to use.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to take care of my side of the street.
For sure.
And there's a lot of good stuff there. I hope you found this helpful, that you can go back through and look at these things and see which ones might I be able to do a better job of, or what things could I stop doing that I'm doing or start doing that I'm not. But then keep in mind at the end of the day that you can't control other people, that you can't just magically change the way other people think.
We want to thank you all for going on this journey with us today and talking about all of these ways in which metamors may or may not like you, or you may be in the stuck in the middle of all of that. And we want to hear from you. What has happened in these scenarios? How have you dealt with these scenarios? Have you had any issues with it? Have you just like broken up with people over it? Have you had great relationships later on with metamors that initially you had shitty relationships with? We want to hear it all. And the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread on our private Facebook or Discourse forums. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Dedeker Winston, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. Our full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.